Okay, episode number 438 is going to be brought to you by a couple different products. One is Barf World raw dog food. Now, if you guys are have little dogs at home that you want to take care of, this stuff is the best. We've done a couple interviews with Robert Mueller, who's the co-founder of Barf World. Barf dog food stands for biologically appropriate raw food diet, and they've got some great, great recipes: beef, chicken, lamb, and they also have a combo recipe as well. Now, the Barf World is raw dog food that contains the entrails as well as the bones. So it's got a perfect acid alkaline balance, and it's also got the entrails, which is what an animal would normally eat out in the wild. They wouldn't just eat muscle meat. Maggie has been on the Barf diet for a couple years now, and she just thrives. Like, she's got so much energy. It's incredible. So if you guys are interested in this, you can grab this on our show page here. And we're also brought to you by Austin Air Purifiers. These are great, great units that we got turned on to by Dr. Doris Rapp, who we had on episode 56. And we've got the interview with her on our store. So if you want to learn more about the Austin Air Purifier, go to our store and check out all the videos that we have on there. But it removes over 3,000 different environmental toxins, 99.97% of all particulates as small as 0.3 microns, and 95% of all other particles, including dust mites, pet dander, tobacco smoke, and mold spores. So the Austin Air is really, really a great machine to get. I would highly recommend looking at it. And if you're in the market to get some of these for your workplace or for your home, go through us and we'll get a little commission. I think you'll really be happy with your product. So if you would like the Barf World or the Austin Air Purifiers and learn more, you can either go to our store or you could go to extremehealthradio.com/438. Alrighty, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us on episode 438 of the podcast. We really appreciate it. Got a great guest for you today. We're going to be talking about mold.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big issue in today's culture and today's society. People living with mold in their homes. So we're going to be talking about that with Michael Schrantz, the head of the Environmental Analytics Group, and we'll introduce him in just a second. If you guys would like the show notes for today's show, actually, we're not doing show notes anymore.
You're on autopilot over there.
If you would like to listen to the podcast on the website, you can do that at extremehealthradio.com/438. We would appreciate that if you guys want to go over there and check that out. Let's see. Is there anything else to get to, or are we just going to dive right into this thing?
Well, let's dive in, but I'm going to already encourage people without this interview having even had taken place yet, but to share this with your friends and family, because man,
oh yeah,
I think this is just such a issue that's running rampant with most people. I'm dying to talk to Michael about how common this really is, but we deal with aspects of it. In our neighborhood, it seems like everyone's talking about this subject. So I just encourage everyone to share it with your friends and family, because you never know what kind of nuggets they're going to be able to get from this you know, realign themselves with health and vitality.
So a lot of people dealing with it and their blood markers. But so we're going to be talking about, you know, a lot of people get those, which is what we did, because we, you know, you just don't know any better. But we went to the hardware store and got one of those little mold kits.
Petri dish.
And we're going to be talking today, not necessarily about, I mean, we can dive into these other subjects, but mainly about testing and how important it is to do the right testing of your house, because you could go and get a mold test of your house and it could be negative and it could show no mold at all, and you think everything's fine, but you're still dealing with some sort of health issue, and there could be some really, you know, black mold, or there could be other types of mold that aren't showing up on these tests. So it's really important to get the right testing. So I heard about Michael Schrantz from a listener, sent us his information in, and then I listened to his podcast over on Chris Kresser's really great podcast, and he does some great work, Chris Kresser. And so it's really great to have Michael on the show today. Thank you so much, Mike, for being on the show.
Justin, Kate, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, first of all, I got to ask you, it says here that you've been at this since about 2007. Is that right?
Yeah, I actually was involved since 1996. Environmental analytics company that I created opened its doors in September of 2007.
Oh, I gotcha. See. Okay. So you've been at this since the late 90s. I think you're a part of the Southwest, let's see, Russet Southwest Corporation, and you led the indoor air quality department there?
That was where I started when I was 16 years old. That's correct. And my mentor, the short version of that story is he kind of gave me an opportunity to get involved with indoor air quality, and obviously I fell in love with it from there.
16 years old.
Yeah, well, it wasn't illegal labor, but you know, I was going to high school, and that was a part-time job for me. And even through college at the University of Arizona, I worked there. And it was funny because I thought I was going to go up into corporate land, you know, work at a multi-billion-dollar company and do the whole thing, get a steady paycheck and have some sort of a pension that no longer exists.
Right.
And I just realized that it just wasn't for me. And so it's funny. Mm-hmm. It's funny the paths that you find yourself on.
Right. I'm just laughing. I'm thinking 16-year-olds are flipping burgers. You had a different path, didn't you?
A slightly different path.
I got yelled at just as much as those guys. But,
I'm sure.
I learned a lot.
That's funny.
Wow. So you've been at this a long time.
Yeah. So was I correct in saying that it's important for people to do the right testing? Because we've done shows on the effects of mold. We had, what was his name? We had Dr. Stephen Hines on talking about... He talked about how to get rid of mold in your body with doing specific protocols. And then we had Doug Kaufman on the show talking about how mold affects the body. But this is slightly different. This is more testing out, doing the correct testing to find out if your environment, whether it be a work environment or home environment, is infected with mold. And is that correct?
Yeah, exactly. I guess you could say there's a difference between testing a person's body, looking for markers, versus testing a home and finding those same type of markers, or at least finding a language that a type of a test that you can use that can communicate between the doctor and the environmental professional doing the work. Because a lot of times that's where there's a disconnect right off the bat.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So where did we go wrong, and where do people go wrong with these home tests?
You're talking about the kits you can buy at the box stores and the Petri dishes and all
yes.
that?
Yeah, that's what we did.
Well, first of all, the intentions, it's tough not to say things without people taking it personally. I know I can tell you that personally. Those kits are meant to make, they were meant to make money. They are a device that are supposed to collect a sample to look for viable growth. And the problem with that is that there's a lot of problems with that. Number one, not all mold that is present can grow on a Petri dish. And so you can get a false negative right off the bat.
Oh.
The other issue is there is something to be said about how you collect the sample beyond some sort of a generic instruction sheet. This is not baking or toasting a Pop-Tart. This is not a instruction sheet. They don't have an instruction manual for a heart surgeon, meaning that you can just buy at a store if you wanted to perform heart surgery. So there's a lot that's involved with interpreting the environment. And I think where a lot of folks end up going wrong, certainly not intentionally, is they buy these kits and they think, well, if nothing grows on this Petri dish, clearly I don't have a problem. And in fact, that's just not true.
And there's some mold that's actually too heavy to be in the air, right? It sort of falls to the ground.
Yeah, you're tapping into one of many subjects or debates, and that's one of them is molds behave differently because of their aerodynamic diameter. They're heavier. Some stay in the air longer. Some don't like to grow in a particular type of media or medium that's poured in that Petri dish. So there's so many variables.
Hmm. Yeah, and so what were you saying a few minutes ago about how some mold is not even detectable within the air? So you could have mold, but it doesn't show up on those Petri dishes because it doesn't catch it or something.
Well, yeah, I'll give two common examples of that scenario. First of all, not all mold that is floating around or that is settled out, or more specifically, the structures or the spores. A lot of people know about mold spores.
Mm-hmm.
They're literally not viable. They are, think of them as this, dead. They can't grow in the Petri dish. And so if they don't grow, to a layman, they may think that there's just not a mold problem, but there very well may be, and that's a whole nother topic.
Mm-hmm.
The other part of it is that studies have shown for quite some time, and a lot of us indoor environmental professionals, the short-term acronym is IEP. A lot of IEPs are very well aware that there's a lot of mold fragments present. So for every one mold spore, for example, from a, let's say it's a hidden indoor source, you can have in between 100 and 1,000 fragments. Well, a fragment doesn't have the ability to grow. You actually need a viable spore to grow. But that fragment, which could be any part of the mold, it could be the roots, the hyphae, it could be the conidia. I mean, there's a lot of different parts of a mold, kind of like a tree. Mm-hmm. If it's present, there's still the potential for that to get into the person's system and negatively affect them. In those two examples, a petri dish would not show a problem, but a problem can really, really be present. And there's a lot of other studies and things to support that.
It's interesting because we had, you know, the petri dish and a bunch of mold grew on that. And as a result, we're moving. We're going to be moving here pretty soon. But so it seems as if those tests, the petri dish tests are like very low level tests. So it seems like if something shows up on that, then obviously there's a much bigger problem, right? If you guys were to come out and test.
Possibly, but then that's an interesting observation because if you do have mold growth on it, one has to scratch their head and go, wait a second, let's go back to the beginning. What are these petri dishes designed to do? Oh, that's right, they're designed to grow mold. And uh-huh. You can put those petri dishes outside and you will have mold grow on them. So my point is that even in that example of getting a positive result, it doesn't necessarily mean that you have an indoor problem. It doesn't mean you don't. But you start to realize really quick that the ability, the need to have an IEP present to help interpret that data is so critical, because a lot of people, it's not just as easy as I have mold, there's a problem, I don't have mold, there's not. And again, in the limited time we have, I'll just say that there are hours worth of conversations we can have just on that fact part of this whole process.
Wow, it's such a complex issue, isn't it?
It is. Fortunately for me, I over the years, you kind of like a puzzle, you're able to put things together and figure it out. But for many, they're lost. They don't know where to go. They go online, they read social media outlets and forums and groups, and there's horror stories. And it's just, the problem is there's not a mold police to help regulate this as much as we would like. And that's another issue. So.
Well, I'm curious, before we delve into the next subject, though, I know that, you know, of course we get the petri dish, we see this horrifying, you know, these waves of green mold spreading out, and we decided not to send it in. But of course, like you said, I go online, I see these mold experts, you know, they come out, it's going to be an upwards of, you know, even $1,200, and they get samples from different areas and outside and all this stuff. Is that as ineffective, unfortunately, for people as the petri dish?
There's certainly been some debate about, and in fairness, I think some of it is legit, between hiring somebody who actually knows what they're doing versus what we lovingly call pump jockeys, people that know how to turn on a pump, collect a sample, and collect a bill.
Right.
But yes, there's inherent limitations with every test, and including some of the more forensic tests that we support, that we do on a regular basis. And I think that's part of the issue, Kate, is a lack of education from these professional companies causing a lot of grief, because when you make comments like, you don't have a mold problem, or even riskier comments like that can't affect you, or that's no big deal. There's probably red flags immediately popping off in the back of your head going, wait a second, what makes this person qualified to say that?
Right.
And as an end result, somebody gets a bad taste in their mouth. They go online to Facebook, they type some, or any other media, they type on some horror story, and then people start relating. And what you quickly realize is that there doesn't appear to be a real good consensus on what type of testing is appropriate and how to educate those people to explain to them that this is what we recommend and here's what we would do if you don't have the budget for it.
This is great. This is why we have you on.
Yeah, this is
why. So what percentage of people are actually dealing with mold, like real problematic mold, in your opinion?
According to some of the more recent studies, and I'll back, take a step back just real quick.
Sure.
There's an organization called survivingmold.com. And Surviving Mold is led by Dr. Richie Shoemaker, a pioneer with people who suffer from what's called chronic inflammatory response syndrome, or CIRS. And there was a lot of data, there's tons of studies, all research driven, to suggest that up to 24% of the population can be affected by mold, who have a specific genotype or certain markers that don't allow their body to process biotoxins the way an otherwise healthy individual would be.
Okay.
Within that study, within that research, there's a consensus statement that a few IEPs, myself being one of them, released on there that talked about those questions about how many people are we talking about. And so here's what I can tell you. Up to 50% of the homes and workplaces in the U.S. have, according to studies, have either had past or current water damage. Mm-hmm. And so if you do some basic math, if you go back to that whole 24-25%, one in four people are genetically susceptible to the development of this type of negative exposure. You're talking about millions of people that could be affected by an exposure to mold because of, and it's not just about whether or not you have the genotype. I mean, even if you're not mold sensitive, it doesn't mean that it's all okay all of a sudden to have 100 square feet of mold on a wall and just ignore it. Mm-hmm. But I think the issue is that there are tons of buildings, especially older buildings, that no doubt have experienced either a flood, a plumbing leak, a roof leak, the numbers in the millions. And so there's a lot of people that are in buildings that have had this history. I think the better question is how many people know that?
Oh, right.
You mean how many people?
Yeah.
You mean how many people know that their building is susceptible, you mean?
Well, certainly. Well, I'll back up a half a step there. When we talk about buildings that have been impacted by a water intrusion, we know that the number's in the millions. Yeah, if studies that have been done in the U.S. suggest that 50% of homes and workplaces have had past or current water damage, you know the number's a lot. It's high. But even within that area, it's first of all, whether or not you're sensitive or not to mold, a lot of times those areas are not obvious. In other words, you don't just walk into your home and say, there's where the mold problem's at. Sometimes it's hidden in cavities, it's in crawl spaces, but communicate into your home. There's a lot of different scenarios of how you can be exposed. Mm-hmm. There's a subset or another concern within that concern of that up to 24% of people can be negatively impacted by this more than your average individual. So it affects potentially millions of individuals across the United States. And a lot of these folks are desperate looking for answers, not knowing where to start, mm-hmm. not knowing what's an acceptable level of mold, and not even knowing which test is an appropriate test to do to figure out what they should do. Should we move? Should we remediate? Should we do nothing? That sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, it's fascinating too, because if you were saying, you know, one out of four people have, you know, show some sort of sign of being affected by mold, those are just people like, you know, if you're running a marathon, some people get tired, some people don't. But the people that don't get tired, it's not as if there isn't any cardiovascular change happening in their body. You know what I mean? So just because someone may not be affected, have symptoms of issues with mold, it's still, I would imagine, a burden on their immune system.
Yeah, I mean, even when you talk about more generic types of exposure, allergenic, you know, people, I got the snivels or, you know, that kind of a thing. There's other concerns like people who, I think the allergenic response is what most people know mold as. I mean, if you've ever had allergies or you've been tested for them, I mean, they test among other things for mold. Mm-hmm. But I think that's where a lot of the education stops. People think, I mean, it wasn't too far long ago when mold was just considered to be a general nuisance where, you know, just throwing bleach on it solved all the world's problems. And we've quickly learned that that's not the way to go. So yes, there are different levels of susceptibility within and among individuals. And unfortunately, there's not an easy way to just walk into somebody's house and stare at them for 2 minutes and go, yep, you're a 24%er.
You've got mold.
Exactly. There is a process involved.
So what is the difference between what you guys do as the owner and operator of Environmental Analytics, and that is environmentalanalytics.net. What's the difference between what you guys do and if I were to go get, you know, I don't know, do people still use phone books? If I were to go look in a phone book or Google and look up, you know, mold specialist, San Clemente, what's the difference between what you guys do and people like that?
Obviously, there's eight different ways I could probably respond to that.
Yeah, sure.
The most PC way, I think, to approach it is this. Every IEP carries with them some level of knowledge and experience, education. And I think there are some individuals in the industry, and unfortunately, they're not always easy to identify. Fortunately, I know a few of them, mm-hmm. Who go to the next level in terms of understanding, you know, why are we taking a spore trap sample for 5 minutes in the air in someone's home and thinking that that's going to somehow conclusively tell us that there's a quote unquote mold problem in the home? So to answer your question, I think what separates my company from a lot of others is that education, that learning from medical doctors who are qualified who know about mold exposure, and we're able to communicate with each other and realize that there are certain tests and protocols actually available. There's actually a protocol called the Shoemaker Protocol, where you collect a certain type of sample, and that sample provides diagnosis and treatment direction. Whereas there, generally speaking, anything else I've ever heard is kind of more off the hip, based off of the doctor's professional opinion, or take some sort of a anti-inflammatory type pill, but it doesn't really go address the root of the cause. It's a Band-Aid solution. And so word of mouth is really the only way that you can screen. Having that education, learning about building science, I think is key. There's a lot of companies that they don't understand or don't seem to demonstrate in their in assessments when they're doing testing that your home is a living organism. It has lungs. Usually that's in the form of an air conditioning system with ductwork. It's got a pulse to it. The ever-changing pressures of the outdoor environment and the indoor environment, opening and closing doors. You ever shut one door in your house and the other one slams behind it or opens up? Mm-hmm. You have pressures that are part of your living condition, and those pressures are pathways and transport mechanisms, and understanding how that all works ultimately can help lead you to figuring out where there could be a possible source, having a better understanding of where molds would typically grow in a particular environment. Well, we found this type of mold. Well, if we found this type of mold, here's where I'm going to look at. I'm not going to look in the crawl space, and here's why. Mm-hmm. Or some other example. The last thing I will tell you is that I think a lot of folks in my industry who do my type of to this sort of general mold testing, they don't even know that or use some of the more forensic tests that are available to them. I think it's fear-based, and it's certainly hard for them to sell it because it's more expensive. And one of those testing options they have is a process called qPCR. And there's going to be a quiz here in about 5 minutes, but quantitative polymerase chain reaction is what it stands for. Basically, it's the same technology that they use to identify DNA in blood. So think crime scene. Okay. They have the ability to look at those fragments I was discussing with you earlier that those Petri dishes can't pick up. Mm-hmm. This technology can. Well, some of these doctors at the forefront, like Dr. Shoemaker, for example, does know about that and takes full advantage of it in terms of understanding what its value is. So it's a complicated soup and mix of experience and knowledge. And I think that if you have a good understanding about building science, how the home can communicate, and the different testing options available to the client based off of what question we're trying to answer, because mm-hmm. that will affect what sample we collect, mm-hmm. I think that's the best case scenario, and that's an IEP that you can at least begin to trust.
Now, with an IEP, if they were to come to your house or they were, you know, give you a quote over the phone, is that something people should be aware of in terms of having a little red flag?
Yeah, that does come up. I mean, I admit I've been on both sides of that issue. A lot of times when people call me up, I end up saying, well, I don't know until I go out to the home. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, how much does it cost to test my home for mold? That's usually what we get. Yeah. And it's kind of like it's a fair question, but it's not fair for me to answer on the phone. So a lot of times we will try to humor them with a range. Mm-hmm. Or if there's special situations where the job's out of town, there's minimum costs involved, which I won't go out unless it's this amount to cover expenses.
Right.
But yeah, I would say it's a yellow flag, guys. If someone's just giving you numbers and they don't ask basic questions like, well, why are you concerned about mold? I mean, that's a basic one.
Yeah.
They just give you a quote. How about what's the square footage? What's the number of bedrooms? How old is the house? Do you have a crawl space? Do you have a basement? I mean, the list could go on, for hundreds of questions. But the point is usually a site visit helps answer those questions so that they can then give the client a fair a range of price. So here's what it would cost if we did this, and here's why we would recommend to do that. That is something I practice as much as possible every day. And if you find that you're talking with a professional, an IEP, who can do that for you, that's a good sign that they have your needs first,
okay,
and not second.
Now, I know Chris worked with you. I think he lives up in Northern California, somewhere up there. If someone were to call you up and want you guys to assess their home, obviously, you're in Arizona. So what does someone do? Do you work with people around the country that you trust that can work with the clients like that?
Yeah, there are certainly you know, naturally the field that I'm in, you know other professionals. There's some notable names that are across the country that I call them colleagues, if you will, that I would recommend with my own family if I couldn't be there to do it.
Okay.
But that help, and that helps some people. I mean, if you go on survivingmold.com, you'll see a lot of the names. If you read the consensus statement by the IEPs, you'll see the names, some of the names I'm referring to. But beyond that, a lot of folks, the majority of them, still lack. That's great. None of the professionals I trust are within 1,000 miles of them.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And so what we're actually recommending, and what I did on the Chris Kresser podcast, is there's a website. It's ACAC.org, and ACAC stands for American Council for Accredited Certification. It's a mouthful.
Yeah.
But on that site, you can click a button that says find certificates, type in your zip code and see people that are in your area that carry certain certifications. And one of the reasons why I am a big supporter of the ACAC isn't just because I carry two of their certifications, but it's also because they're one of the few bodies that are accredited. And if we're talking about minimums, you know, you're talking about, you know, you get red flags, yellow flags, things that, let's talk about things that you would at least want somebody to have. If you're an IEP, it would be great if you didn't have a 3-day mold certificate behind your name.
Right.
And the certifications offered through the ACAC a lot of times require years of experience, especially on the higher tier certifications, which they explain. And also, it's accredited by companies that are third party who show that these are legitimate certifications. It's not just something that you and I created on the back of a bar napkin and then created a fancy website. So there's third-party accreditation to make sure that these folks have a minimum set of knowledge. And that's really what most people end up doing. The other option that they can choose to do is they can contact folks like us. It doesn't have to be me. There's other professionals that do this type of service where they'll email us, they'll contact us on the contact us link on my website, mm-hmm. and they'll explain their situation. And depending on my time and availability, we'll either set up a time to do a phone consultation to really try to figure out and iron out the details. Or if it's a very quick question, I may be able to just direct them to somebody, saving them hours, if not tens of thousands of dollars in bad decisions.
Mm. Oh my goodness, that's so cool. So yeah, I would imagine if 25% of people are affected, and then you know, with allergies and things like that, physically affected by mold, and then if 50% of the homes have had some sort of water damage, I mean, you're looking at 100 million homes or something like that around the United States, just in the United States. I would imagine this would be something that if someone is dealing with a health concern and unable to figure out what's going on with their health and their symptoms and their processes, then this would be obviously somewhere where you want to look, right?
It's definitely a starting point. And again, I think there's a lot of fear, and you can kind of dispel some of them just by communicating.
Mm-hmm.
The listeners or anybody who has a concern about their home, their health, there's not a mandatory requirement to write a check for $10,000 to these professionals. I mean, a lot of the information, if you know where to go, is free.
Mm-hmm.
Survivingmold.com, no joke, is a great site. Whether or not you're encouraged to do your own research, but who of us have time when, you know, you read a document to read the references that they attach? No, there's not a lot of time in our lives. Seems like we're so busy. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you that I know of no other organization from a medical perspective other than, you know, than Surviving Mold that can give you that information from a medical end. And in terms of the environmental part of it, the guys that go out, girls that go out and test the home, I'm a great starting point for you. I don't have to be the guy. Trust me, ever since the Chris Kresser podcast, since you referred to it earlier, mm-hmm. I've literally been contacted by probably 150, 200 people across the country. And I will tell you that probably 90% of them, if not more, I didn't collect a dollar from them. I was just able to help direct them, give them some education on questions they had. They were putting things backwards in the pieces, and they didn't even know where to start. So I was able to line them up correct. Mm-hmm. And that's the best we can offer right now until we are able to come up with some sort of a third-party website, which, by the way, I'm working on, for people who can go to it if they don't have an option, if they don't have a professional that they trust that they want to use. The next best thing is to do kind of like a virtual boots on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
We are creating literally such a service because I've been inundated so much by people needing help, desperate for help. marriages being threatened to be destroyed, houses being threatened with bankruptcy, you know, having to lose their home and everything, because they're that lost in the process. And so our way to help those folks out is we're trying to come up with a website that we're working on right now to give a place for people to go who can learn more about what's all involved in mold testing and kind of what the concerns are. And then at that point, if they choose to consult with us, if they feel that's the best decision for them, then they're more than happy to do that. We'll do mm-hmm. the best we can to help.
Yeah, I mean, I could imagine, you know, what if a wife is really, really affected? I mean, we don't know how much people are being affected of that 25%. What if it's really, really bad and the husband's not affected at all? The wife wants to move, and then all of a sudden you got this incredible strain on a marriage.
And he might think it's all in her head anyway.
Yeah, he might think it's just crazy.
Yeah,
you kind of hit the nail on the head. You hit the whole elephant in the room thing. In my experience, 90% of the time when I deal with folks who have CIRS or just flat out have a concern for mold for whatever the reason is, mm-hmm. it's that exact dynamic. Mm. It does happen the other way, by the way. There are. I think the data suggests that because of the way women are built, you know, in terms of the genotypes and all that versus males, that women do look to be a little bit more susceptible than men. Mm-hmm. But I've seen men in the same situation. Let me tell you something. Believe it's two-way street.
Yeah.
You can have, whoever's not being affected is usually the one that's yelling the loudest because
right.
they're trying to figure out why they need to spend tens of thousands of dollars based off of an air sample that costs $50 to collect.
Right.
I know, right? I mean, think about that. People's retirement or their bank accounts. You know,
that could get really dicey. No, totally heated. I guess yeah. I didn't think about that aspect. I'm so curious. Are most people that are calling up, this is just to quench my own curiosity, but are most people seeing mold somewhere growing and they're freaking out, or are they feeling health ramifications? What's the most common?
I think most common is an actual event, whether they can see it or they knew it occurred. So water loss, current past, visual mold, or suspected mold because of an odor, like for example, in a basement.
Oh, right.
So obviously there's a bias. I mean, I don't get a random person actually, like my next door neighbor calling me up, but we do get those calls, and a lot of times there is something to it. Their issue it ends up being trying to define how big a problem it is.
Right, right.
Gosh, mold is such a tricky issue because we've seen, you know, people talk about it and heard people talk about it, and I've read about it. You know, people are talking about how it's that there's been mold spores found in space, and if you go underneath the soil, you got this mycelia that sort of acts as almost like a spider web blanket that just covers the entire planet. I wonder if it's like, is it even possible for someone to remove mold in all aspects from their house? I mean,
and would you want to?
Yeah, is it something that it's part of living on the planet Earth?
Yeah, I think the best way I can respond to that is there is a general understanding, agreement, certainly a consensus and thought of there's no such thing as mold free. What there is normal fungal ecology.
Okay.
The issue is defining what normal is, and you'll find that there's all sorts of other debates and that going on. But generally speaking, normal is kind of what you would expect your home to have in it if you, A, didn't have an indoor mold source or any source nearby, like a crawl space communicating mold into it. And also, it would be reflective of what your outdoor molds are. So you have a fungal ecology that surrounds your home, all sorts of sources. There's no way to get around it. Right now, as we're speaking, we are breathing in, among other things, mold spores, fragments, you name it, from the outdoor environment. It's not a clean room situation where you can somehow quantitatively prevent or show numbers to prevent that entry. So there is a difference. And I think what you get into is, A, some people don't even know that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a starting point. That's a bit of education. The other thing is, that's what our goal is. It's hiring a professional, an IEP, who can come out there and determine based off of what your outdoor environment is, whether or not it's reflected on the inside. And if it's not, of course, the next question is why, and do you have a source, and where, and how do we go about finding it?
Okay, so, did you want to say?
No, go ahead.
No, so it's important to figure out what mold spores at what level is happening outside your home and compare that to what's on the inside, right? So like what you just said, that comparison is important, isn't it?
Generally speaking, and I would say generally represents 90% of the time, yes, there are some exceptions. There are some actual indexes that don't require an actual outdoor sample, ways of interpreting your data that we can talk about as well if needed.
Wow, that is fascinating. So you were saying that many homes have water damage and things like that. I would think that even just a heavy rain would cause a potential issue, wouldn't it?
Sure. Fluctuations in the presence of mold, seasonal variations, temperature, rain, obviously. And even if the rain doesn't cause an initial problem, the raindrops are kicking up stuff that were otherwise settled and now they become airborne. So there's a real, it's almost like a beautiful dance of nature doing its thing. Unfortunately, some folks wouldn't call it beautiful when they're being negatively impacted. All I can tell you is, yeah, there is that variability. And that is a key variable in the equation that an IEP should be looking at when they start to speak with their client after they're done sampling, making comments, which is a lot of what gets these folks into troubles because they make absolutes. Mm-hmm. You don't have a mold problem. Oh, don't I? How about at the time I tested with the limitations of the tests that I took, I do not detect any evidence of a quote unquote mold problem according to my own proprietary testing criteria. Now that sounds like an attorney wrote it, right? But that's more reflective of what they should be saying. Anybody who says you just flat out don't have a mold problem, and I want to say one more thing. Anybody that says that you don't have a mold problem should really back it up with something substantial. Here's the other side of it. I'm not trying to let you or the listeners think that you have to have a mold problem. By no means. It's just when you understand something and you can get a better appreciation of what mold's about, you're able to draw your own line in the sand of comfort. What are you willing to be worried about? What are you willing to do to investigate this problem?
Right.
And some people, unfortunately, are treating mold from a fear-based standpoint, and they treat it like radiation. If there's one spore that they find in their house, they're going to have to get rid of everything. And I think you guys would agree with me that there is an extreme on both sides of the concern, that you shouldn't be concerned at all, and that there are some people that literally should be walking around or rolling around in a gerbil ball cage. I think there's a happy balance, and I think that's what life's all about, is it's educating folks and putting things into perspective, because almost everybody I talk to, at least one variable of what they bring up in our conversations is so off-based, and I can usually respond to it with data, with peer-reviewed studies, whereas they can base it off of a fear-based driven thing. It's not based off of anything rational.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In your opinion, is any structure salvageable or no? Are there some that are just too far gone, you can't even deal with these places?
I'll speak from my own experience.
Yeah.
I have yet to come across a home where the recommendation was to rent a bulldozer. But what I will say is I have been involved in a couple of homes where the remediation exceeded $100,000. Now, that's relevant, right? I mean, one house was worth $500,000, the other house was worth $4 million. If it was an apartment or it was a $100,000 home, that's a different situation. So
right.
I think most homes can be return to a pre-loss condition. I think the issue is finding the talent available to do such work.
Now, did you want to say?
I'm just curious, when the talent comes in and you're working with the right people and you have a good team of people, I'm picturing, I don't know why I'm picturing people in like hazmat outfits and things. Like, how gnarly of a process is that to treat these big problems? Are people putting themselves in danger? I mean, I'm sure that they've, worked through ways to protect themselves, but is it something where everyone's leaving the house? I guess it depends on the situation, but like in a black mold situation, it doesn't even seem like people would want to be exposed to that for the cleanup,
sure.
Right?
I think you also, made a good point that it does depend, right, on the nature. Are we talking about a guest bathroom that's not normally used that can be set under a proper containment so that you guys can continue to live in the home because you literally don't have the funds to go rent a hotel while you're waiting? The reality starts to kick in versus what we would just recommend, because anybody could tell you, stay away from the house, don't do this. Throw that away. But the reality of it is that some people literally can't do that. It's under a bridge is the next option for them.
Right.
And so we deal with, and what I'm known for, what my reputation is known for, is I'll still stick to the protocols that I truly believe in, but I'm willing to have a conversation with those folks. And the deal is that I make them own their own responsibility and their own decisions, whereas they're looking to push it on everybody else. Like, well, if we do this, then am I guaranteed not to have a problem? No, nothing's a guarantee.
Right.
And the other thing is, to your question, is it depends on, are we talking about an easy access plumbing line? Are we talking about an issue where you have a poorly poorly built crawl space where there's a tendency for biocontamination to grow up in there, and maybe your flooring in the home is old, so there's a lot of cracks, and there's a tendency for things to communicate into one space to the other. You might imagine that to fix that is a lot more expensive than, say, just replacing some drywall in a bedroom closet that was even under containment, even using the proper controls that are available.
Well, you just painted a beautiful picture of what that would look like when the process is done, quote, right, because it's different than these guys, like you said, coming and just scooping up air samples and taking them off and then kind of definitively saying you do or don't have a problem. I love that people, you're right, are assessing the building, because every building is its own ball of wax. Mm-hmm. I mean, it has to be.
There's not a cookie cutter template that says, you have house style B, remediate as such. There is reasoning behind the decisions. Mm-hmm. I think it really, what I've learned is that you talk about in generalities of what's the biggest way we can help everybody. It's education. Mm-hmm. There are so many people stating their opinions, and that's all they are, not based off of fact, not based off of research. And it's really causing a lot of instability, a lack of trust, a lot of negative energy in the environment, in the industry, because now it's to the point where you can't even feel comfortable calling up an IEP to ask some questions because you think all they want to do is sell you on the most amount of samples. In other words, mm-hmm. you don't feel like they're putting your concerns first, and that's problematic. And so I think you talked earlier about having that sixth sense, or the ability to detect, you know, your red flags are going up. Mm-hmm. If you're dealing with somebody who really is trying to help you, they need to get paid for their service. I mean, they have bills to pay too. Right. But by the same token, your intuition, you know, that little sixth sense, I see credible people versus dead people. You know, if you see them saying comments that look suspicious, when there's smoke, there's usually fire. If they're being open, if they seem like they have nothing to lose by telling you things, or, you know, they're being candid with you, they're asking questions that make sense to you, that's probably the most amount of proof you're ever going to get that you're dealing with somebody who can really help give you those answers to your questions of, how much is this going to cost to remediate? Do I need to be in my house or be out of my house? Mm-hmm. And let me just tell you, we never subscribe having anybody be in their home while there's any remediation done. It's just that sometimes there's containment controls, different strategies that people can use to isolate that work, to help folks who just can't up and leave their home.
So what would you suggest if someone's actually looking for a home and they found a home that they really like, and they think it's, or maybe an apartment or whatever, you know, if they want to rent a home or something, if they want to go live somewhere, what would you recommend? I mean, how difficult is it to get some good testing on a home if they don't even own it yet?
Mm. Sure. That's actually a great question, and it comes up quite a bit. A couple different thoughts actually on that, because again, it depends. Budget being an issue, and not now just be from person to person, but because you haven't even bought the house, people don't want to spend as much money to do those sorts of inspections. Mm-hmm. Here's what I would recommend you actually do. In the right order, I would have your home inspector go out first on day one of your standard 10-day inspection period. And I would have them look and see if they see any elephants in the room. Because if I'm putting your needs first, that is the potential home buyer, not mine, the IEP, mm-hmm. I would say that they may be able to identify an elephant in the room. A lot of them have minimal training, but they're looking for things, if nothing else, to cover their own butt. And they may be able to identify it, and that may be enough for you to say, it's not worth it, I'm walking. Mm-hmm. And then you just saved a few $100 by not hiring an IEP on that house. Okay. So that's step one. Step two is, if for some, you know, you want to proceed and go the next step, I would consider having a visual assessment done by an IEP, because at least having boots on the ground to look for some of the signs that aren't so obvious to the layman, that aren't so obvious to a home inspector, they may be able to detect for you, and you're going to spend a few $100 versus maybe a couple grand. For those folks who need or should have empirical data, actual samples being collected, there's so many caveats, but what I would say is I would literally consider doing your own ERMI sample or surface dust sample to get an idea of whether or not you could have a mold problem in the home, which you can actually do yourself. And please know that when I say that, I am not a big fan of people collecting their own samples. I think we just spent the first few minutes of our interview saying that that's going to be bad, but right. Please understand I'm trying to humor your point of, what if people don't have that much money and they're looking for indicators? They're willing to live with the risk of knowing that maybe they could be wrong when they collect the data or how to interpret it. But in return for that risk, they don't spend $1,000 or $1,500. Maybe they only spend $300. So that's what I would recommend you do is you get the home inspector out there first. Okay. If needed, you get the IEP to do a visual, and then you consider doing an ERMI sample, which I'm sure you're going to ask me what that is.
Yeah, what
and,
is
and, and we'll go from there.
An ERMI. I love it.
So yeah, first of all, does that acronym ring a bell to you guys at all? I just don't know what I should talk about on that.
That doesn't to me. Is it to you, Jay?
No.
Okay. So there's a lot of debate, by the way, and I'm sure there's a few listeners already cringing, but they're not here to talk right now. So right. Here's... I'll talk their head off about it. There's definitely pluses and minuses. Environmental Relative Moldiness Index, ERMI.
Okay.
Developed in part by the EPA, a powerful research tool that uses that qPCR technology to screen a house for mold. It is a surface dust sample collected with usually, there's different, a couple different media, but a Swiffer wipe. If you think about a Swiffer cloth, a dry cloth is usually collected and there are some basic instructions of how to collect it.
Okay.
And then you send that sample off and it gives you a score. Hmm. It takes a look at 36 molds. It groups them into group one and group two. The group ones are what they call common water damage related molds.
Okay.
And group two are common fungal species, just molds that you would commonly find in any environment that we go back to the outdoor environment and that kind of thing.
Okay.
And it provides a score. It takes there's a formula for it and it adds this group minus this group and it gives you a score. And then it puts that on a graph and shows you what's the potential that you have a mold problem in the home. The good thing about that is that it can detect a lot of things that may be hidden, much better than a pair of eyes can that are untrained, in my opinion. You're going to spend about $300 for that test. I would recommend sending it to Micometrics, which is a laboratory in New Jersey, Monmouth Junction, New Jersey. But they're one of the pioneers that really commercialized this type of testing. And then you get the result back, and That's the good news. It gives you an idea, a screen of what's the likeliness that I have a mold problem. Here's the bad news for those people that were patiently cringing. ERMI is just that. It's an index. It's a screen. In my experience, it's not just about the score. And unfortunately, too, especially depending on how the house was taken care of, you can have old dust built up in home that's years old, and I've seen in my experience that if you have an old, dusty, nasty house that you sample off of and you have like these big old piles of dust bunnies throughout the home, it seems like pound per pound you're going to get a higher score on average than you would if the house was cleaned a day ago, yesterday, by some professional cleaners. And so then there's the issue of, well, what's the average amount of dust you should collect? And right now, the committee and the panel that I'm on, you know, you're talking about 4 to 5 weeks is ideal, but you can't just tell the homeowner, oh, by the way, we don't want you to clean your house for a month.
You know,
so there's some practical limitations here. So here's why I'm saying it to do it in that order. Remember, I specifically said, start with the home inspector first, see if they can identify any elephants in the room for you.
Mm-hmm.
And if that doesn't come up yielding anything, hire a professional, an IEP, because they may be able to go out there and go, well, you see this bubble of paint right here that's sticking out? You see that's on this plumbing wall? I think there's a mold problem. And they may recommend at that time, beyond the visual that they're doing, some sort of a testing regimen that's appropriate. Not everything has to be a qPCR sample. I mean, when I'm looking for actual sources of mold in walls and ceilings and floor cavities, I'm not doing qPCR. A lot of times I'm using the more inexpensive type of testing, which most folks are familiar with, which is direct examination. My point is you can have that mold inspector bring out his toolbox, if you will, to try to locate these areas. It's only if the mold inspector, the IEP comes back with nothing, but you still are concerned about it. Maybe your senses are not right. Maybe just something don't smell right in the home.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't afford to fly me out to do that actual test for you, then the next best thing is to try to consider to, and especially if you're on a budget, then the next best thing to do is to collect one of those samples yourself. The only other underlying option you have there is you can have somebody like us consult with you where we guide you through the process of how to collect the sample. But as you might imagine, it's a little bit more expensive because even if you're not flying us to come out there, we still have to take the time to get to know about the house, which means we're going to need you to fill out some information for us. We're going to want you to take photos, kind of be our boots on the ground, our eyes on the ground. Mm-hmm. And then only then can we provide you with some sorts of a protocol to test that home to see if maybe there's a mold problem that was hidden that you never would have known about until it's too late. And so as you can see, it's not a perfect solution, but it's the best one I can recommend because of all the other unknown variables involved in this process.
Mm-hmm. So that's fascinating. I'm so curious about people who have to submit testing to insurance companies and things with their health reasons. Mm-hmm. Are insurance companies accepting like a home testing kit as proof that there's could be toxic mold to a family, or are you having to go so many layers deep with what you guys do to actually have some of this stuff turn around and be able to help them with coverage of medical expenses? Do you know?
To be honest with you, when it comes to the insurance industry, we don't really get too involved. Not in the capacity that you're talking about.
Okay.
Usually, if they're hiring us, it's because they want us to work for them to talk about something. But to answer your question, I think that a lot of the insurance companies, in my experience, will stay away from the actual testing. Mm-hmm. Some will cover the remediation, but they're going to want you to. It depends on your coverage, so you have to talk with your agent and see what kind of coverage do you have. Mm-hmm. Some of them have exclusions. We don't cover mold.
Right.
And they do that for a reason because it can get out of control.
Of course.
And they don't trust the people that are doing the work.
Right.
But what I will tell you is that sometimes you talked about the medical part of it. I think you want to talk to a tax accountant, but I'm pretty sure there's a way to write off certain expenses, like having an IEP come out and you spend, say, $500, $1,000 or what. I think there's a way to write that off, but that's a tax accountant question.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. I wondered how that worked.
Is Mycometrics the only lab, or are there other ones that are just as good as that as well?
There are other labs that do that type of testing. EM Lab P&K is another lab here actually in Phoenix area that we could use. And I don't personally have a problem with EM Lab P&K. I think the takeaway here is to say it more of a positive. There's a lot of work that goes into analyzing these samples, and beyond with a PCR sample or qPCR sample, there's things called probes and primers, and it's kind of like the chemical agents and what that they use to detect the mold in the sample that you submitted or that I submitted and that kind of thing. And we know that they use one of the best, and you pay a little bit more for it, but you get quality. And my argument is that here you are basing off decisions that may include you buying or not buying a home, between you perhaps remediating an area in the home or doing some sort of clean that could cost tens of thousands of dollars. Mm-hmm. Do you really want to try to save $30 to get a value sample from another company that may be more known to do that sort of thing? And unfortunately, I won't say any names just because of the liability there. But what I will tell you is that I like Mycometrics because I think that they are one of the best. I think the lab director, King Tae Lin, is a pioneer himself. He cares. He'll talk to you. This guy's busy beyond belief, and he'll give you that information that you need. He doesn't cut corners. And you don't want somebody to cut corners when you're trying to make $100,000 decisions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Here's a question. It's obviously important where people are going in the future to be aware of these things and have things looked at. How, in your opinion, is it important to take stock of the past of where you came from? Like Justin and I are going to be moving in a month and a half to a new place. And, mm-hmm. We'll have that probably now that we've talked to you, looked into. Having done a little home test kit here, seeing mold, going, oh my gosh, it's moldy, we got to get out of here. There's other reasons we're leaving. But in your opinion, would it be kind of crucial to do that last, like maybe like an ERMI or however you say it, the test to know kind of what we were dealing with, to watch if some of these things with our health challenges start disappearing? Or is that kind of like, hey, it's done, we're in a new place, it's better, we'll kind of clean everything up from here?
That's a great question. Baseline data, let's see what we have. You don't even have to submit it. You could just carry it with you and
just to kind of know.
You want to be careful not to cross contaminate. But again, hard to have this kind of conversation in an hour. But
right.
what I want to tell you is, yeah, that's a great idea. And I'll even segue off of that.
Sure.
A lot of this testing, the ERMI panel, the ERMI test, is where Shoemaker, Dr. Richie Shoemaker, was survivingmold.com. That's where he started. He was able to make a correlation. He was able to look at literally hundreds of patients and their genotypes, their markers, and compare it with their scores and solve a correlation. Every time the scores were this, every time this type of mold was present, these people had an adverse reaction. And hindsight's 20/20. Right. So, you know, if you needed it after you found out you were a 24% or you had CIRS, chronic inflammatory response syndrome, you may be curious and go, hey, I took that sample from that house. I don't know if it's going to be related. I don't know how much use this data will be, but wouldn't it be interesting if it comes back really bad? Mm-hmm. And we were able to help answer some questions for our own peace of mind, if nothing else, mm-hmm. that may be worth the $300. Mm. So, yeah, I would say if you want to collect it, go for it. The issue again is people have different options. And I think what they should always do is in order to figure out what's the best option for you, you need to start with calling somebody. If it's me, that's great. I'd love the opportunity. If it's not, I understand. There are other people, throughout the country who we trust, who we recommend, who can help you figure out, should you take your own ERMI sample?
Right.
Are you okay with just a visual inspection? And then you're going to be able to throw your information into it as a client. Well, I only have $500. I'm not willing to spend a dime more. Mm-hmm. Or I have $3,000 because it's a $2 million house or whatever. There's so many things that affect it, but you want to start with people that you trust, and I think that's a no-brainer. And if you're looking for a place to start, quite literally what I would do is I would go on your computer, I would type in www.survivingmold.com. And I would, right on the front page there, I'm doing it right now to make sure I'm not giving bad information. There's kind of like a drop down of more articles, and there's a indoor environmental professional panel consensus statement, and you click on it and it's a PDF. It's for free. You will see the names of people that practice, that we all have our own nuances and our own experiences that are slightly different and in a lot of ways complementary. But on the basis of dealing with clients and patients who have CIRS, who are working with doctors who have the certifications to know whether or not you actually are probably impacted by mold, these folks are following the same protocols that Dr. Shoemaker would want us to follow in that specific situation. And those are the same people that if they're in your area, I would say that you give them a call and start with.
Cool.
So you mentioned him a lot, Dr. Shoemaker at survivingmold.com. Who is he? Is he the sort of
pioneer?
Yeah, the kind of pioneer behind all this?
Yeah, Richie Shoemaker, he's a medical doctor, and I think among our community, and there's quite a number of us, a recognized leader in this particular endeavor. Without giving you the long story, because you can actually click on his picture and it kind of goes back into like how he got involved and all that. Mm-hmm. He's got a lot of reputations, and so, as do most of us. And I would say one of the most complimentary ones to him, in my opinion, is that he's a stickler when it comes to if you're going to say something does something else, you need to prove it with data and research and peer-reviewed studies. In other words, don't give me none of this. It's your professional opinion, because that doesn't count. That doesn't cut it. And so he is research driven, peer-reviewed driven. He brings the knowledge. He brings the proof. He has a list of other CIRS certified physicians throughout the country. Some, I believe there's even a couple that are out of country. I think there's one or two in Australia. I mean, it's an expanding field. And when he identified this, he uses the phrase Holy Grail. He found a problem that no one else could solve. Going to their doctors and patients were saying, oh, you just have psychological problems or it's no big deal. And people were still feeling sick. They didn't look sick, but they felt sick. They didn't have the motivation to get off their couches. They experienced what we call brain fog, or what our industry calls moldy brain. It doesn't mean that everything is mold related. You'll find that CIRS expands beyond mold. It can include VOCs. It can include bacteria exposure. But mold was a big component. If you talked about what's the most common exposure, it seems like mold was coming up a majority of the time. This is one of the only doctors I'm aware of, and as you might imagine, I deal with a lot of them, who seem to connect the dots and provide the research so that when someone asks the question, well, how do you know that's what caused it? He gave you an answer, mm-hmm. and nobody else could.
Wow.
And so he's worth, if you want to spend time, any listeners, researching a place that you feel you can go to trust, a place that can give you the medical angle, can give you the environmental angle, which is kind of more what I do, I recommend you go to survivingmold.com. It's informational. It's not meant to, and for $4,650 three times a month, you too could be healed. It's not about that.
Right.
Yes, if you see one of these doctors, you're going to have to spend some money. But here's the thing. A lot of these doctors, in my experience, are your biggest advocate. It's amazing what these doctors are able to do to help you with your insurance and other sorts of things to really help get you in a situation if you are one of those individuals who have this problem but don't have the money to help fix it. So start there. And see, you can learn more about Richie right on the front page. You click on his thing. There's a couple few paragraphs about him, where he started. Mm-hmm. And then take a look at those consensus statements, because that's the culmination of medical experts and IEP professionals in our respective fields coming together, agreeing on a lot of the questions that you've asked me today, including when do you test? How should you test? We didn't talk much about remediation other than a little bit, mm-hmm. but it even goes into that facet right there.
Yeah. I wonder if he's someone we should consider having on the show.
I think that's a great idea. And I know he does podcasts and radio interviews all the time.
Okay. Maybe we'll reach out to him.
That would be great.
You know, we didn't ask you this yet, but I'm curious how often someone should test. So let's say someone gets a mold test, because I know you went through the ringer with Chris Kresser, and he tested and retested and tested, retested. Hmm. If someone actually comes out with a cleaner test, I guess I don't know if it's possible to get a completely clean sample, but let's say they feel like, okay, now we've done all the work, we've done all the testing, our house is good. Should they retest? If so, how often do you think?
I think, first of all, there's not a set, protocol for that, but there are some guidelines. We'll start with the common sense ones, right? If you think there's a problem, for whatever the reason is, maybe another good time to test. That, it doesn't matter whether you have CIRS or not. Mm-hmm. That's just the common sense. But then you dive a little bit deeper. For those folks who have been formally diagnosed with CIRS, or if they otherwise are considered to be immunocompromised, that sort of thing, a lot of folks will recommend ranges. Like, let's say they've had a bad experience in their home. There was a water loss, a flood. They've remediated it. Things look good. It's tested out good. A lot of times what will happen on a clearance test, so keep in mind, you found a problem, it's been remediated, you've tested that area out to make sure that it looks like it's been cleaned up appropriately. And then a lot of times what will happen is folks will test a month later. And the reason they'll test 4 to 5 weeks later is because they want your house to acclimate, to return to its normal living conditions. Having plastic strung up, having HEPA vacuums and damp wiping and dry wiping, having negative air machines that suck air into containment to keep things under control mm-hmm. is not normal. And your home will communicate as such, and it won't be normal. So you want that house to build up and reacclimate into its normal living environment, and then they'll sample it again. And if things check out good then it's just a personal preference. Mm-hmm. If you're working with a CIRS physician, for example, and every 6 months or whatever, you're getting your blood work done, and the doctor says that they've seen a spike in one of your levels, like your C4A levels or whatever the marker is, that may be enough justification for you to resample your home. Mm-hmm. I would ask you, ask the people that are, if they get in that actual situation, reach out, because they're either dealing with a doctor at that point who knows what they're doing, so they can ask them, or they can contact somebody like me and I can help provide guidance in case they forget half the things we've talked about today.
I know this is sort of outside your expertise, but you just mentioned one of the C4A levels. Do you know by chance off the top of your head any other levels people could look at with their blood to see if they're being exposed?
The Shoemaker protocol has a bunch of different things. I know MSH. There's a whole host, and I'm actually trying to see if I can pull up the protocol itself.
Oh, cool!
Because it lists it, okay. But they're only some of it's only some of it. I mean, it's not something. In other words, this is also not like something where you go to the store and you buy a how to do heart surgery kit. You don't just simply look at the numbers and go, well, clearly because I have a C4A level greater than 20,000, I must have this or I must have that. In the Shoemaker protocol, I know he focuses on MSH levels and C4A, but I also know that there's a bunch of other markers they use. So what I would recommend folks do is they go on the Surviving Mold website, and I believe, just to give them some direction, there's a link under symptoms and treatment, and there's a few different things that you can click on. It'll literally walk them through step by step on some of the things that these doctors look at to tie it all together and determine whether or not you're being exposed into your home.
Interesting. Yeah, we'll look at that.
Very cool.
Go ahead.
I have one quick question. Yeah. I'm just so curious about folks who have air purifiers and think they're doing this really great. We could ask that too.
I was just going to ask that.
They're doing this, we have the same mind, doing this great thing by having these awesome, expensive, probably most air purifiers, and they think that, this room is clean, it's got to be cleaner. Are those things doing anything, or are they actually doing some damage by sucking things in and God knows if they're releasing things back out?
Definitely, that's probably a good topic to I don't know if we how much time we have, but certainly one to end on if we don't have any more time. Here's what I can tell you about. There's a difference, first of all, between an air filtration unit versus an air purification unit. Filtration takes away from the air. Purification typically adds to the air, traditionally. And here's what I will tell you. Certainly having products that are air filtration devices, HEPA units, scrubbers, they make all kinds. There's IQ Air, there's Austin Air, Honeywell makes a bunch of models to scrub the air. They're certainly not a bad idea. Mm-hmm. I think the issue is why is it there in the first place, which I think is to your point. Are we providing a Band-Aid solution? Right. I mean, is it a preventative step, or is it because you notice that you feel really sick in your home, so you thought that this is the best thing to do? And my answer to that is you need to hire an IEP to go out there and figure that out with you. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean you have to spend $2,000. There is a difference between, just to clarify, a site visit where you can ask somebody for their professional opinion versus having them go nuts with sampling. But the air filtration devices are ways to lower exposure, especially when you're in situations and, again, it's each one needs to be looked at individually. You can't take this as a generality or the listeners. But let's say you live in an apartment. Well, you can't remediate. And most apartment places, unfortunately, have the reputation for not being proactive in a way that would help these folks. Right. We have a water leak. So a lot of folks who can't move or they're really limited will put a scrubber in their room to try to help things out. And sometimes they report to their doctors that they notice a slight improvement. But I've never heard of any success story where they had a problem in the home, they put the scrubber in there, and all their problems went away.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The purifiers are, real quickly, are a little bit different. There's a lot of unknowns about, there's not a lot of long-term studies available with these units that, I mean, we know about ozone, for example, mm-hmm. and we know that generally speaking, ozone, injecting it into your home can be of a particular concern because it is an oxidizer. And if it has the ability to oxidize and break things down, I think there's a couple of concerns, one of which is how does it not have the ability to break down the sensitive lung tissue that you have? Why are the lungs, there's different questions about exposure mm-hmm. to ozone. There's other newer products, new technologies right now that are releasing things called hydroxyl radicals, which are kind of like an oxidizer itself. And we are starting to see anecdotal, subjective improvements from clients who are using some of these products. But unfortunately, we're also hearing folks that said they've used it and they've gotten worse. So in my personal opinion, the verdict is out on purifiers, and I'm not saying you can't try them. Maybe that's your only option you have, and if it works for you, great. But I would seek the counsel of a qualified physician and talk to them about what you're planning on doing, because there may be secondary effects to this exposure that you didn't even consider as a patient, thinking that because you went on their website and they said all the buzzwords that you needed to see to buy it, that it was going to be your miracle worker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It's important for people to get to the root cause of things. You know, I mean, like, just like what you're saying, it's, if someone's putting a Band-Aid on something that's, there's some root cause that's causing them to be sick, a purifier is not going to be the answer. But, if someone has done all that work and they have done what they can to limit their exposure to mold in their house, obviously throwing an air purifier on top of that might be something, for them to consider if they really want to, but not to use it as the remedy itself, right?
Oh, we lost him.
Did we lose him?
Are you guys there?
There you are. Hi.
There we go.
Sorry.
Not
Sorry
at all.
About that.
Yeah. No worries. So, I wanted to ask you, just closing out, it's environmentalanalytics.net, right? Is that where people can get a hold of you?
Absolutely. They can learn a lot about what we spoke about. There's an About Us tab, I believe, and if you click on it, there's a contact form. And if you click on that, if you have any questions, feel free to send those questions my way. I will do my best to respond to anybody who sends that to me.
Awesome stuff.
So, and then if people can contact you also if they want to find people in their area, you might be able to turn them on to other folks.
Absolutely. Yeah. It has been a blessing and also a learning lesson about the opportunity, one, for me to be able to help folks in need. At the same time, it's really sad to see how many people are seemingly affected or sick, and it's a very depressing thing, and I wish I can clone more of me. I wish I can clone some of the other professionals that are out in the field. So this next comment I'm making is on behalf of those folks that are trying to help those people. We're doing the best we can. Right now, the issue is that the supply is really low and the demand seems to be really high. And us not being able to get back to you in 2 hours after you send us an email or a comment type of thing is not personal. We are trying to stack up and deal what we can. We're trying to educate more and more local peoples. I'm working right now with a professional in California to try to be able to take care of some work out there because I can't reach all those folks. It's just a slow process. All I can tell you to do is just hang on and have hope that you're going to get direction. My goal is to send you guys in the right direction. And most of the time, just for the listeners, it has nothing to do with me. I'm not making any money off of this. I'm gaining happiness and satisfaction, but the ability to send you off to people mm-hmm. who we trust are not just out to get your money.
Right.
Awesome.
Well, I mean, we all have to earn a living. But hey, let me know when your that website you're thinking about or creating is done, and we'll share it with everybody that's involved.
Will do. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, that sounds like a good thing. All right, Michael, thank you so much for being on the show. We really appreciate this a lot.
Yeah, you're welcome. And I wish we had more time. I know there's a lot we can talk about. And if any of your listeners want us to focus on anything in the future and you guys agree with it, let me know and I'll try to do that with you guys.
Yeah, I think we would love to do it again.
Yes.
I think this is a super important issue.
You bet.
Awesome. All right. Hang on the line there, Michael. I'm going to close out the show. I want to thank everyone for joining us. If you want to grab this show and listen to it on the website, you can do that at extremehealthradio.com/438. And we appreciate each and every one of you. We really appreciate it a lot. And if you find this podcast to be valuable, please share it with your friends.
Yeah, and send in your questions. Email us in your questions for the next one we have, because mm-hmm. I think that this is just, you know, the tip of the iceberg. Michael mm-hmm. has hours and hours and hours of information, and I'm curious to see what other folks, you know, are dealing with. We know our questions, but I think sometimes we overlook what everyone else is also interested
yeah.
in asking. So
yeah.
send them our way and we'll do it again.
We'll do it again. And I want to thank everyone for joining us. We'll catch you guys on the next episode. Hey, before we get started, I just want to let you guys know, don't forget to check out our store. We've got so many great products in our store, and I'm just so proud of everything that we have in there. It's just such an incredible place to go for unique and cutting edge alternative health products and things like that. And our store is how we are able to continue to do this show for free. So your support is amazing, and we appreciate so much all of you guys visiting our store. We've got all kinds of cool stuff on there, like jewelry. We've got the Coco Jack, which is a really cool tool to open your coconuts really, really easily. Grounded bed sheets, water structuring, vortexers, the Vitalizer Plus. We've got grounded running shoes. We've got organic, chemical-free, toxin-free, heavy metal-free cookware. We've got the BioMats. We've got Morocco Method hair care products, Anne-Marie Gianni skincare, Living Libation skincare, EMF testing products for your home, water filtration systems, the Berkey. We've got Excalibur dehydrators, standing desks. We've also got the Bellicon rebounders and blenders and juicers and Qigong courses and the Ejuva cleanse, yoga trapezes, the sauna, Sir Thrival's amazing products, One More Away, the Squatty Potty, Vitality Herbs and Clay, which we love a lot. So go over to our store, and next time you're in the market to make some purchases, think about us and go through our store. We'd appreciate that a lot, and I know that these products we use and you will just love them. So we appreciate that so much.
Do you think you have moldy brain?
Like that documentary by, what's that documentary we got sent? Called Moldy, isn't
Moldy.
It?
Moldy, yeah. Moldy.
By, what's the name of that guy with the bulletproof coffee? Oh, Dave Asprey. Moldy.
We should watch that.
Yeah, we should watch that.
Sitting there with all of our spare time.
Oh, man.
No, but that's important. I've wanted to watch it since we received it. I don't know what our problem is.
I know. We'll get to it.
Yeah.
Lots to do in a day.
You know what's cool about talking to Michael?
What's that?
Michael? Do we call him Michael? Mike?
I think so.
Whatever. He's cool. Mm-hmm. I like that he's not an alarmist. He's rational and reasonable and saying there are obviously reasons for people to be concerned, but I love that he didn't scare the heck out of people, you mm-hmm. know?
Because yeah.
a lot of times everything, like he was very aware of fear-based languages, fear-based propaganda, and he's not discrediting the importance of this subject, but I felt really hopeful. Like it wasn't a depressing conversation. Like
yeah.
it could have been.
Mm-hmm.
He has a really good outlook on, I think it's just providing hope and providing resources and understanding, and that's always empowering.
Yeah, and you can tell he's really genuine, you know, really honest. And
absolutely.
You know, you can tell his heart's in it, in the right place, wants to help people. That's crazy, though, that 25%?
24.
Of people feel the effects of mold.
I think we're in it.
You think so?
I think we're, yeah.
I can tell you, though, that since we've been here, our health has has been affected dramatically.
Yeah, we've been very negatively impacted from when we lived in our other place, didn't we?
And I wonder, because this building here, I think, is since the
50s.
The 50s?
Yeah, I've lived in old buildings since I moved out of my parents' house I think I was 20.
Yeah.
And now I'm 37.
Every place you've moved has
been old. Every place I've lived has been old.
Except for that one place down there, down closer to the beach.
Oh, yeah. My first move out was okay. And I was only there for 1 year. Every other place I've moved since, which has probably been 6 or 7 places, has been really old buildings. The oldest one I lived in, I've lived in like 3 or 4 different places from the 20s.
Mm-hmm. Remember back in the hotel days, you were drinking the hotel water and you knew any better.
Yeah, people listening probably think I lived at a hotel. Yeah. It's an old converted hotel that was from the 1920s, late 20s, converted into awesome apartments. It was pretty cool. It was like 40 some odd apartments. And there were all these little, it was really neat. There was a cafe downstairs and it was like you were living in Europe, but you were living in a beach town, you know?
Yeah, it was really cool. But, Spanish building.
The old pipes, man. We'd be drinking the water. I drank that water the whole 3 years I lived there.
Just out of the tap?
I bathed in it. I drank in it. I boiled it to make all my gluten-based meals at the
time. Gosh, think about you boiled that water on pots and cookware that's leaching metals.
It was leaching metals, and then I'd pour my Kraft macaroni and cheese. I've come a long way.
Oh, my gosh. You've come a long way.
You know?
That's crazy. Think about that. You're leaching heavy metals, and then you already have tap water, and then you're putting Kraft macaroni and cheese in there.
While I'm in my lead-based paint apartment,
we had to sign a
thing saying we were very aware of the possible health ramifications going into running such a unit. And,
Isn't that crazy?
You're 23 and invincible, and you think, oh, lead paint, whatever. They wouldn't have, they painted over it. It's okay.
Yeah, lead's gone. Don't worry about it. It's just
copper pipes, drinking.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm sure there were so many issues with my living conditions. I had a great time, and at the time, I didn't think I was being affected negatively, but holy mackerel I think I'm feeling the ramifications and the after effects still.
Yeah.
To this day, I'm a little concerned. I mean, this building is old, and we've had all kinds of roof leaks and problems, and mushrooms and things we've visible to the eye. Mm-hmm. But I'm concerned about what we can't see. We've had an attic up there, you know, that's sealed off that we've never even been in in our hallway, and you wonder what's lurking. And
what do you think? Should we contact Michael to do? Mm-hmm. Should we do some testing before? Because it would be good to know before we leave. Like he said, if for nothing else, just data.
I
think
like
it's important for people to know, even though you don't really want to spend the money.
I know.
But I think it's important because if no one really spends the money, we're not going to really realize how much this is affecting or if there's a correlation or...
Once we move in 2 months or whatever, I'm not going to be able to get back in here and get that sample from our living... it's like that's just gone as part of the past. But if it could help me piece together, I thought it was interesting how he said Dr. Shoemaker was... kind of helping people piece together a lot of their health challenges with,
it's like treatments as well. That's really cool too. Because it's one thing to be able, you have so many different sides of this. You have the testing side and then you have the fixing side. So it's one thing for someone to say, yes, you have mold.
Right.
And then it's one thing else for someone to say, okay, here's how we fix it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's another thing for someone to come in and say, okay, here's what it does to your body. And then it's another thing for someone to say in terms of your body, here's how to fix it. Mm-hmm. So there's like 4 different levels to this where, it's important to get a handle on it, I think.
I think so too. And I thought that was interesting at the beginning of the show where he talked about, not all people with genetic mutations are going to have mold problems. But I find it fascinating that the day we moved in here, I'm not kidding, the day, it was like, I think 3 days prior to us moving in, they let me paint the living room.
Uh-huh.
That was cool. They let me paint it so it wasn't just ugly and white and I felt more homey. And so I was in there painting it. And I was living off these bean and cheese burritos from a drive-thru a couple streets over. Mm-hmm. This is what, 6.5 years ago. And I remember...
You've come a long way.
I've come a long way. But I remember it was literally, I'd get those things, come here and do some work, getting ready for us to move in. And I started having negative reactions to that food. That was the moment where I realized, oh, I might not want to be eating flour. Oh, I might have an issue with cheese. I might have a, and then from there, it's gone into these other strange kind of sulfur issues where, you know, okay, so then I give up gluten and then it's like, oh, why can't I eat eggs? I give up eggs. Oh, and then why can't I, you know, all of a sudden onions and garlic are a problem. Like it's been 6.5 years of this slow decline. And I just find it really fascinating that it started
day one,
the minute we moved in here. So
isn't that interesting?
I would love to. I think I would like to do that ERMI sample at least and spend the $300 or whatever, and just for my own peace of mind.
Yeah.
And then watch my levels and my blood work being done every few months and see what changes. I mean,
next time we get our blood done, we should figure out from Dr. Shoemaker what the markers are,
and for then the chronic inflammatory disease.
Yeah, and then for our next blood test, mm-hmm. we can do that.
I'm interested. I think for me, I mean, he was saying if you kind of have a hunch, that's enough of a reason to do a little bit of testing, you know, and then if you mm-hmm. find out, you can do more testing and stuff, but based on what your findings are. But in my gut, something says I would like to know and have that information before we exit this place
mm-hmm.
for you my own knowledge.
You know what we need is more people like Chris. What is his last name? Who does the home... The building for people in homes, like green buildings.
Oh yeah.
I'm blanking on his last name. But he's with
Black Diamond Group.
He's a cousin of David Wolf, and you'll see links to his website, I guess, if you search on David Wolf's Facebook page. But you know, he talks about the same thing, like these buildings are living beings, like mm-hmm. they're living entities, and mm-hmm. you know, and it's interesting that you have someone could say that about this place or any place. It's a living entity. Mm-hmm. But if you build it correctly, the way he's doing it commercially and residentially, mm-hmm. like it really is a living being. It's self-sustainable. It breathes, you know, it's got the indoor outdoor capabilities. It's, you know what I mean? So I think that's going to be the future of where we're going.
I thought that was awesome that Mike touched on that today. I've never thought of a house as a living being, to be honest. And then
yeah.
he starts going through like what that means. I said, yeah, that resonates with me. And on a spiritual level, I mean, I know that sounds crazy, but certain houses, they have different vibes, you know? And I think, wow, how could that attach or certain entities with people with problems with their, you know, ghosts and paranormal activity and stuff. And I'm thinking, wow, it's interesting that it would quote attach to a living entity versus mm-hmm. something that's dead and dormant.
Yeah, that's true.
So the life of a house seems to be real to me on a lot of levels. I wouldn't be surprised if we don't understand even what goes on energetically in a house.
It's an interesting correlation. For those that are interested, his number is 520-290-6653 at environmentalanalytics.net. So you can find that out.
He's just a nice guy.
Yeah, super
like
nice
him.
Guy. Yeah, I liked him a lot.
Good guy.
Good guy. And so we'll share also his website. I'm not sure what that was or exactly, but when he's done completing it, we'll share it with you guys too on Facebook. So if you follow us on Facebook, you'll see it in the coming months when we post that. Environmentalanalytics.net. And this was extremehealthradio.com/438. And if you enjoyed the show, please pass it on to your friends. If you really enjoy it, please buy through our Amazon link. That's how we support the show. So,
yeah.
If you can just bookmark our Amazon link, that would be great. A lot of people are also donating to us on Patreon, to keep the shows 100% free. So
yeah.
you can do that.
Thanks for that, guys.
Yeah. Super, super grateful for those of you that, are doing that. And, that helps. I mean, we pay all of our bills, everything through, you know, listener
support.
Yeah. Yeah. All of you guys, supporting us and helping us keep it free is great. So, Amazon is a great way to do that. Patreon is a great way to do that. You can donate a couple bucks a month that comes out of your account once a month. And then also, if you're interested in any sort of cutting edge health products, we do have a online store with all kinds of cool stuff like, rebounders, saunas, blenders, juicers, Qigong courses, programs and courses, and a whole array of different things, water structure, dehydrators, all kinds of cool stuff. So don't
Austin
forget to check
Air.
Out. Yeah. We have the Austin Air purifier mm-hmm. on there.
I still want one.
Yep. And that's about it. So thanks everybody for your support and for your listenership. We really appreciate it. Share the show with your friends if you would. We would appreciate that. And we'll catch you guys on the next episode.
Hey, everybody. This is Josie, Justin's mom. Don't tell him, but I know he would absolutely be really happy if you would sign up to his free weekly newsletter. And don't forget to share this with all your friends. This is the Buzzing Bumblebee signing off.
That was so good.
Hello.
Oh my gosh.
No material on this blog is intended to suggest that you should not seek professional medical care. Always work with qualified medical professionals, even if you educate yourself in the field of live food, nutrition, and alternative medicine. I'm not a doctor, nor am I offering readers medical advice of any kind. None of the information offered here should be interpreted as a diagnosis of any disease, nor an attempt to treat or prevent any disease or condition. While information in this blog is discussed in the context of numerous conditions, it can be dangerous to take action based on any information in this blog or to start any health program without first consulting a health professional. The content found here is for informational purposes only and is in no way intended as medical advice, as a substitute for medical counseling, or as a treatment slash cure for any disease or health condition, and nor should it be continued as such. Always work with a qualified healthcare professional before making any changes to your diet, prescription drug use, lifestyle, or exercise activities. This information is provided as is, and the reader slash viewer assumes all risks from the use, non-use, or misuse of this information.